much more entertaining Papua Nuevo than you. That was a tough one, I'm telling you. It was tough.
Madam Chair, we were entertaining.
Yeah. I bet you were entertaining. And I do apologize for missing the hearing, but it had to be a very good proposal, and I did get to go to the State of the Union, so I didn't want to turn that down. But, again, a thank you to the members and Senator Jungbauer for a good hearing, I understand. And I'm sure we will have a very vigorous discussion today that will continue. But we will be having a vote today on this bill. So the first item, of course, and first and only item, is Senate File 4. Senator Koch, if you're ready, please proceed.
Ready. All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. So we have now before us Senate File 4. We had, some great presentations on both sides of the issue on Tuesday, and I appreciate all the time and energy put into that. I had made my arguments. I think that that this is an important, very small step that adds to Minnesota's portfolio. I believe we should have a balanced energy portfolio. This is, I think, just a small step. It doesn't give any preference for nuclear power. It doesn't build a plant, but it just says it can be on the table. We can discuss it. The PUC could consider this as an option. One thing that has just a little bit of information since Tuesday, and it actually goes, Madam Chair, to the State of the Union address. President Obama announced his plan to win the future by producing more electricity through clean energy. And I would just read to you from the White House's proposal. They have a bullet point that is to draw on a wide range of clean energy sources, to give utilities the flexibility to generate clean energy whenever, wherever makes the most sense, all clean sources, including renewables, nuclear power, efficient natural gas, and coal with carbon capture and sequestration would count towards the goal. So that was something that we heard on Tuesday from the president. I think that this is the right and a very small step to take, and I would appreciate your support for the bill.
Senator Koch, would you like to move the bill?
Madam Chair, and I would move Senate File 4, and I believe it's for approval and going to the floor.
Right. Is there any discussion on the bill?
We've got it in.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I would move the A3 amendment.
Senator Howe moves to amend Senate File 4 with the A3 amendment. Is everybody – oh, excuse me, the A5 amendment.
A5.
Does everybody
amendment.
Have the A5 amendment?
No.
I don't think so. Okay. All right. Have you explain once everybody has a copy, Senator Howe?
Madam Chair, members.
Well, Senator Howe, wait till everybody has a copy.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I can tell that.
Madam Chair, members, the A5 amendment speaks to the decommissioning costs, and every 3 years the people who own a nuclear generating facility prepare a nuclear or a decommissioning report to the PUC, and this amendment allows the PUC to take into consideration the impact cost estimates to ratepayers, assuming that nuclear fuel may be stored in the state for 60, 100, or 200 years following the cessation of operation of a nuclear power plant. And part of this requires the commission, the PUC, to provide that report to the legislative body within 180 days of the final determination of that report. So we would get a report approximately every 3 years on the status of spent nuclear fuel and the cost to decommission any nuclear power plant in the state of Minnesota. And with that, I would be open to any questions the members may have.
Senator Howe has moved the A5 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator.
Thank you. And I would just say thank you, Senator Howe, brought this amendment to me, and we've had some vigorous discussion on it. Both Senator Howe and I represent the two districts in the state that have nuclear power plants with the storage on site. And so I appreciate his concern for it. I I'm amenable to the amendment. I think, you know, I appreciate that he's looking at this issue. I think we heard a lot of discussion on that. I think that it is an issue that whenever you're considering this type of energy has to be considered. And so I would support this amendment.
Senator Pope. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. First, maybe Mr. Fuller can remind us how this works. It talks about approval of a plan for funds once there's a decommissioning. How does that work? What does our law say happens when a plant is decommissioned?
Mr. Fuller?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is before it's decommissioned, there has to be an emergency plan in place. So that's funded. That's in Chapter 12 of the statutes. And that's money goes to the host communities and other people who incur emergency expenses. That could continue after decommissioning, is my understanding. The decommissioning plan is to basically, at the end of the day, restore the land to greenfield. And there's money that goes to that. There's money that goes to decontaminating. And there's a third stream of money. And how that works is incorporating the PUC makes an estimate of what accruals of funds have to be made to achieve these ends. And the utility includes that charge in their rates and puts the money in escrow. I believe it's at Mellon Bank right now. It's a significant amount of money. For more detail, I think the PUC is here. That's the detail that I know.
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Or Madam
that's
Chair,
good.
That's fine. That gives a general idea. Madam
Senator
Chair.
Anderson. Yes?
The other question I have, I guess, for Senator Howe is on line 1.13, you talk about cost estimates assuming the nuclear waste, the used nuclear fuel, will be stored for 60 years, 100 years, and 200 years. How did you come up with those years? Why not 1,000 years? I mean, what's the outside number it could be? Couldn't it be really a long time?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the reason I came up with those numbers, after 200 years, it gets quite, the projections aren't real accurate. And we have the range to provide that estimate out 200 years. You know, I think we don't know what's going to happen in the future with the current administration and the closing of Yucca Mountain. So this just addresses those concerns, and it puts at least a dollar amount up to 200 years. That may not be the right number, but I think once you go beyond 200 years, your numbers are not accurate. And so that's where that time frame came from.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to comment, testify on this amendment? Please come forward. State your name, please. No fighting.
I do have a handout. I don't know if that's
okay. Is this on the amendment?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, Madam Chair. My name is Kristen Eide Tollefson, and I live in Florence Township, which is just south of the plant by about 15 miles. And I've been following, as a citizen advocate, I've been following nuclear waste issues since 1995, when Florence Township, the township I live in, was tapped to become possibly a site for waste off of Prairie Island, as was required by the Prairie Island Bill in 1994. So for 15 years, I've been following this. I helped to found a citizens group whose mission was responsible nuclear waste storage. It's a pretty tall order. And I've followed this effort at about every policy level as a citizen, advocating before the PUC on responsible nuclear waste storage and commenting on rulemaking to the NRC, the EIS for Yucca Mountain for the EIS, and through all of this, I have been particularly appreciative of Minnesota's past efforts to ensure that nuclear waste is not stranded in Minnesota. The nuclear waste, our own Radioactive Waste Management Act specifies the priority of protecting Minnesota's waters and environment from the consequences of nuclear waste being stranded indefinitely. And my review, which I'm passing out, it's sort of an historic review of Minnesota's actions, some of the highlights of Minnesota's actions along the nuclear waste timeline. And it's notable that no state, in my investigations, no state except Nevada has had so much impact on policy. And there's no other state in the union that's maintained its authorities to intervene and to make terms and conditions under which waste is stored in Minnesota. It's a very remarkable record. It's very unusual in the union. And as a citizen and a neighbor of the plant, a downstream neighbor of the plant, I'm very appreciative of this. And so when this last vestige from the Nuclear Waste Management Act of removing the nuclear moratorium, which was one of the terms for controlling nuclear waste, came before the committee and the legislature, I looked to my legislator and all of you to tell me and to let me know what next, what you will do to protect the waste from permanent, the state from permanent waste storage. And so my testimony is that I just saw the amendment. I knew that there was an amendment coming, but I just saw it. Since decommissioning funds do not normally cover long-term waste storage, and since the NRC, one of my updates there to you is to let you know that the NRC in its latest confidence decision extending confidence in on-site storage from 30 to 60 years, which puts the waste at Prairie Island at 100 years, which is the outside technical integrity, cask integrity for waste. And the NRC has also directed its staff to look at maintaining on-site storage at reactor sites on major water bodies across the country for 300 years. So this is probably, you know, the most pertinent actual fact that I have for you, that the NRC is looking at on-site storage for up to 300 years. And so I'm very grateful that you're considering this amendment, and it's a very direct and cost to evaluate the cost impacts, and I want to testify in favor of the amendment, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Tolleson. And this amendment is from your senator, Senator
Yes.
Howe.
Yes. Thank you, Senator Howe.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Can I just ask Ms. Tolleson, do you think we should amend this to say up to 300 years?
Yes, I do, Senator Anderson, Madam Chair. If NRC is looking at that as an outside date, I do think, in my analysis, I'm actually something of a citizen expert on this. And
I'm aware of that.
It is not, while I understand, and that makes sense to me, that the economics of looking out that far are more challenging. There is direction in the environmental impact statement for Yucca Mountain that recommends that if waste is stranded on site, if there is no action at the federal level, that the facilities should be replaced every 50 to 100 years entirely in order to maintain integrity. And we have no such plan in place right now for funding complete facility replacement.
My question, Senator, is they are capable of doing 300 years or 500 years or 1,000 years with this amendment, right?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, I think that the numbers get rather fuzzy once you get past all the discussions I had. And I actually reached out to the PUC on this amendment, and this is the language that they would prefer. This is the, you know, I think the numbers that they feel comfortable with. And you know, we might end up, to your point, getting out to 300 years, mm-hmm. but it might take us 100 years to get there. So we'll eventually get to those numbers because we're going to get a report on every decommissioning report, you know, so every 3 years. So eventually we might get there, but I think it would be burdensome, and it'd be a little bit like throwing a dart to try and have an accurate number.
Mr. Fuller?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, there's nothing in here in the amendment that restricts the Public Utilities Commission for asking for a more extensive data if they so desire. So this is just the standard obligation on Excel every time, but if the commission decides that, you know, a longer look is necessary, they could order the utility to do that.
Madam Chair, that
Ms. Paulson.
Thank you very much. The practical dimension of the 200 years is that the environmental impact statement for Prairie Island and for Monticello both look out 200 years. So you do have some good parallel there.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Good questions. Discussion.
Madam Chair, I move the A5 amendment.
The question is on the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Is there any other further discussion on the bill? Senator Dibble.
Okay. You see the question mark above my head again. Well, I don't know if we're going to have any more discussions. I don't have any amendments to offer. I commend Senator Koch for accepting this particular amendment. I recall in our conversation on this subject last year, there were a number of other concerns raised, and they continue to be concerns. And an amendment was offered that was rejected. It was described as akin to not lifting the moratorium, but I disagreed. I agreed with the amendments, but then continued to believe it was still lifting a moratorium, so didn't support the underlying bill. And some of those, you know, we had extensive testimony last year in this, and chief and key among those is, you know, what is this really going to cost? The lack of investor confidence, because it's well understood that the capital costs are tremendous to build these with no assurance that you could get through that process. So we see the example in other states where ratepayers are basically guaranteeing these capital costs and are being nicked for that, you know, quite a bit. So it was surprising to see the Chamber of Commerce here. The fact that none of the utilities in the state are asking for this, I think, is very telling as well. The fact that our own Department of Energy doesn't anticipate or forecast this kind of baseload need for the foreseeable future. So before we lift a moratorium like this, or, you know, perhaps we could even consider conditioning the extension of a certificate of need based on some basic public assurances. What's going to happen in Minnesota, now that Yucca Mountain seems to be off the drawing boards, are they going to start looking again for a national repository, and are they going to find the Granite Shield up in northern Minnesota an attractive place? Should we deal with that issue now as we're starting to take steps down this path? What is the effect and impact on the renewable energy industry that can be homegrown and really keep and accrue those benefits locally, and how does that stack up compared to kind of, you know, big Westinghouse General Electric turbines coming in from somewhere else and building a huge plant like this? You know, we talk about, you know, the storage issue. We're looking at that a little bit here with Senator Howe's report. But really, are we grappling with this issue of long-term storage on a temporary basis? Temporary permanent, I guess we're calling it now. Putting this waste in casks on pads next to rivers for hundreds of years is of a concern, I think. And I don't think there is really any, we should be troubled by perhaps placing additional conditions like that if we're going to actually lift a moratorium that's so significant. So I continue to not be persuaded by the testimony of the proponents of a couple of days ago. I continue to be fairly skeptical and fairly concerned about taking this step.
And Senator Dibble, I just would like to, I totally understand your position. I would like to thank Senator Koch and Senator Howe for their diligence and bringing many of the groups, interest groups, and getting a broad view about this and being very sensitive about a lot of these issues. So we are the thoughtful body. And I think it's a step forward, but completely understand where you're coming from. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I want to say I have a lot of concerns, and members, I did have some amendments drafted that I will not offer because I kind of look at things and then when I really looked at it and thought about just lifting the moratorium, the idea is to kind of get an offer on the table, to get the discussion out there. And we all know that nuclear, should we get a proposal, is going to take a lot of time. I mean, years to do where we can actually look at what somebody's trying to propose and then react. But it's still, you know, kind of always gets me going here when we talk about the storage, because it is an issue, but we could reprocess, and we know that that's not viable. Nobody's lifted the ban on reprocessing today. But the new technology offers so much hope for so much less storage, and that's what always boggles my mind is when you talk about the demonstration projects of things like pebble bed reactors and things that maybe require 3% of the storage for that spent fuel, and, you know, talk to some of the folks on the other side that have said, well, you know, Senator, because I've said, let's build new technology and let's simultaneously decommission so we don't have these huge storage issues. And you know, people talk about it and they look at it and they go, well, yeah, but it's too hard to do that. But so we're always anticipating adding all this other language on top of something when, as many said, we may never get a proposal. So if we merely lift the ban and, you know, everybody also knows I don't like studies and I don't like having to send everything to the legislature because, quite honestly, members, we can go get every bit of this information from the PUC ourselves. We want to read it without mandating that they send it over here. But I'm okay with that because it's already put out there. So I think we should know, and I hope members will read it. But I think the gist of lifting this moratorium is to allow people to have a discussion. And I've heard so many times, well, they can discuss it. No, nobody's ever going to put an offer forward when you can't do it, when it's there's a moratorium on it. And I've argued that on water issues as well when I talk about my water recycle bill. Well, nobody's going to come in here with a plan for water recycle when we have no parameters. You can't come in with a plan and say, well, gee, you've looked at it and you've said we might be able to do something like this, and I'm going to spend millions of dollars to propose something that isn't on the books. And that's what happens in nuclear. Nobody's going to spend the money to create a proposal when there's a moratorium. So the simpler we keep this, the better chance we have of looking at it. And quite honestly, on those cost issues, and again, I've discussed that with both sides, I do believe nuclear will come in way more expensive than what people anticipate, which if you believe in green energy, whether it's wind or solar or something else, I think it'll make those alternative energies look more affordable than they look today when we look at what a new nuclear plant costs. But again, without a proposal on the table, we have no numbers to look at. We have nothing to compare it to, and so we need to lift the moratorium.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Drunkenbauer, you might get me yet there.
Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Senator Anderson.
I don't think so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a comment or two as well. I mean, it's not really a big suspenseful outcome today of what's going to happen. I think it's pretty clear what the outcome of the vote will be. So I just want to say for the record, you know, we had some good testimony, but I don't feel like any of the real questions have been answered or grappled with, and that this bill doesn't deal with the real questions, which we really should be looking at before we're sort of putting the cart before the horse. Number one, we don't have anyone who wants to build a nuclear plant, so I'm not sure why we keep spending so much time talking about helping them think about building one, because we have a resource planning process in our state that works really well, and utilities put their plans out there for 15 years ahead of time, and so it's not like they don't want to build one right now. They don't want to build one in the next 15 years. So I'm not even sure why we're spending time on this. It seems like a red herring to me because it's not ready for prime time in Minnesota, number one. Number two, you know, all I've heard about the current state of the nuclear industry is what's going on in some eastern states where the experience has been cost overruns, construction delays, and ratepayer revolts over the astronomical prices that they're being forced to pay before a single kilowatt of electricity has gone, you know, provided them any lights to turn on. You know, it hasn't done a thing. And so it's the current state of the industry seems to be in a state of failure nationally. And I think if we're going to seriously contemplate nuclear, which we may want to do in the future, I don't disagree with that. We may want to do that in the future. But We sure don't now. Now is not a good time. It's just not looking good. It's not looking like a good investment. And again, I haven't heard any answers to why they're having that experience and why we think we wouldn't. I think ratepayers would be at huge risk if we were to move forward with a plan like that now. And I guess finally, the perspective I would offer is, as one of the senior members of the committee who was here in 1994, and I don't know, Senator Metzen, were you on the committee then? You probably were, yeah. You've been on it a long time.
The 1944.
Yeah. So, yeah, right.
Godfather of energy.
It just feels like that, Senator Metzen.
Yeah, really, I know. Well, we've been having a lot of this, it's that deja vu all over again thing, and you probably can speak to that more than I can, but in 1994, the reason this moratorium was put in place was, well, there are a lot of reasons that were related, but the big debate was we don't have a solution to the waste problem, and so we shouldn't be building more plants until we have a solution to the waste problem. Guess what? Fast forward, what is that, 16 years, 17 years. Guess what? We don't have a solution to the waste problem. Here we go again. We're not really learning with history. You know, you're supposed to not repeat your mistakes. And I feel like we're not making a big mistake because we're not actually contemplating building anything. We're just having a political discussion, in my view. But we're not learning from what history has taught us. And we just haven't made any progress on this topic. So it just kind of... It just sort of boggles my mind why we are so intent on pushing this forward. So I'll be voting no.
Senator Cook.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, just a couple things that I, you know, wanted to, you know, do a little bit of response there. I think there's been not a lot of movement on this because there has been a political fight that's really held off nuclear power in this country, and I think it's a shame. I think that at one point nuclear power was sort of the USA's. We America, had the forefront on that, and we have sort of run away from nuclear for 30 years, and sort of, you know, put our heads in the sands on it. And you know, other countries have moved ahead in developing things. So I'm excited to see, with the president's emphasis on nuclear power, with states around the country starting to emphasize nuclear power, what's going to happen with the nuclear industry in the United States. The policy, and you know this very well because of the heavy emphasis that you've had on renewables in the last, since 1994, policy that we put in place around this table absolutely has an impact on the energy portfolio for the state of Minnesota, and we have been saying absolutely not to nuclear power. So the resource plans that you spoke of, why on earth would anyone put nuclear power in the resource plan in the state of Minnesota when there's a moratorium? So, you know, I think there's a little bit of a chicken and the egg argument there that you're making, Senator Anderson. As to the storage issue, I think Senator Jungbauer had a good point. I think the new third and fourth generation plants have a much lower waste issuance. And so, again, I think that goes back to developing nuclear energy in the state. I also think that you're going to see some movement on interim storage, and I hope there'll be some movement on interim storage. We're waiting for the Blue Ribbon panel to come out on that. But even so, all of those discussions would be had. You know, we don't take away or give any preference for nuclear power in this bill. All we're saying is, you know, let's lift the ban so we can have these discussions. And the Public Utilities Commission, who is the body in charge of looking at rates and looking at, now we're having them look at the waste issue, their job is to determine if that's something that fits within Minnesota's energy portfolio. So you know, I would just appreciate people's support with this. My bill grew by an extra page with the Senator Howe amendment, so we're a little more to carry now, but looking forward to continuing to work on the issue.
Senator Howe?
Madam Chair, I just want to speak to the fact that you know, I'm appreciative of the committee allowing the amendment to go on. You know, as former mayor of Red Wing, I can't speak. I'm no longer the mayor of Red Wing, but I can say during my tenure as mayor down there, you know, we always supported the nuclear industry. We supported the Prairie Island Nuclear Generating Plant. Our concern was really with the federal government's lack of response to the storage issue. And I think... you know, I think lifting the nuclear moratorium ban is a piece of moving forward. I think what the amendment does, I think it strengthens our case, and I also think that it also allows for the new technology that Senator Jungbauer is talking about. With the there could be a new technology that'll further denigrate the life expectancy. We could end up, who knows, using the spent fuel in a number of different ways. So I think it allows for that discussion because we are going to hear what avenues are available from us, from the PUC, and from the nuclear industry. So I appreciate the discussion, and I appreciate the courtesy the committee has given to me.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just a couple other things I wanted to mention. One is I'm a little disappointed that the issues that the governor has raised are not they're not considered in this bill. And the governor's been pretty clear that if there's some concerns that he has are not addressed, he's going to veto this bill. I mean, he won't say veto, but he says he's against it, which is almost the same thing. So, I mean, that's up to him to consider, but he's raised concerns about more waste in the state and about the risk of terrorism and access to plutonium. So I think those are his big concerns, along with ratepayer protection. And secondly, I guess to Senator Koch, I would say I understand the whole chicken and egg thing. We could both go around and around about that for a long time. But I'll bet you $100 that if this bill passes and is signed into law, there's still not going to be anybody in the state of Minnesota who's going to plan to build one for 15 years. So that's not going to change. And then the third thing I would like to say is that, yes, I agree also that our policies do drive what happens. And that's good, because otherwise we'd be spinning our wheels and wasting a lot of time. But I'm glad that our utilities are committed to following the path that we've established over the last few years in Minnesota for our energy policy, which is to develop Minnesota-based clean sources of energy that we have in abundance, like wind and solar, that create jobs now, right now in our communities. And that's what I'd like to see more of. I just think that's more in Minnesota's best interest.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I just wanted to acknowledge the fact and let Senator Anderson know that I did reach out to the governor's office and discuss this amendment. And, you know, there wasn't an affirmative or a negative that that the future bill will be signed. But I think it strengthens it because I think it does alleviate some of the concerns from the governor's office. So there was a reach out to Governor Dayton on this issue.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and kind of to answer some of Senator Anderson's concerns as well. Again, new technology. There is no way to reprocess the spent fuel on new technology into weapons-grade plutonium. Mm-hmm. So you eliminate that idea. The next thing is, even if you don't reprocess, we still have people out there with good, viable alternatives that are getting close on secondary generation, taking that spent fuel, reusing it. It has a lot less energy, and it's a lot less consistent, but there's ways to look at that for secondary generation. But without lifting this moratorium, we wouldn't even have that option of using that for secondary generation today. So we may well work our way into a way to utilize that spent fuel if we can lift this moratorium, so it actually gives us some opportunities that aren't there today. And again, back to the resource planning, you don't plan your resource against something that's outlawed.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the question is on the motion of Senator Koch that Senate File 4, as amended, be recommended pass. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, members. Thank you,
members. Yeah, that was quick. Next Tuesday's committee hearing will be the continuation of our discussion about the impacts of our state energy policies and what they are doing to industry and jobs. As you remember, we had just got one part of the discussion the other day. It was a great discussion. We'll continue that on Tuesday. On Thursday, we are Senator Metzen had a great idea of going over to the MISO, doing a little field trip. So we're going to go over there in Energy Park and Senator Anderson's district and have a little tour, and very anxious for that. So that's the plan for next week. You all have a good weekend, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.